south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. You know, on occasion, in fact, very often, people ask me to do a favor for them. I'm talking about gringo people, you know, who don't speak Spanish or speak it rather poorly. For example, the other day, I was down at a new car dealership with one of my new gringo friends, you know. I call them my new gringo friends, those other people that come down to my Expat Insider Seminar and end up either staying here permanently or coming back some months later and getting their residency and making a life, their plan B move to Latin America. Anyway, I was at a new car dealership the other day with a newly arrived gringo friend. I know, you're thinking, Johnny, what are you doing at a new car dealership when you're always saying, don't buy a new car? You say, don't make yourself obvious. You know, blend in as much as you can anyway, as a gringo. Well, you know, some people just like to live dangerously, and besides, it all depends what kind of car you're going to get. If your goal is to get a brand new car that's absolutely neutral in style, neutral in color, and, well, doesn't stick out because so many people have them, then that is a good and acceptable way to play the game. Except you will dish out first world money because you're buying a brand new car. That said, there are a lot of strictly neutral, unobtrusive, non-attention-getting new vehicles out there. If you want to buy one, go ahead. Just don't buy a luxury brand like Mercedes, Audi, BMW, or Range Rover. And of course, don't buy the color Ferrari red or some candy-colored fluorescent car because, well, then you will stick out. Which, by the way, is something that's inbred in the Latin nature, I guess, and in the nature of teenage young American boys, too. You know the type, jacked up hot rods with trick paint jobs. Why do you think that moronic Fast and Furious movie franchise just won't die? What are they up to? Fast and Furious 117 now? You think anyone with over a room temperature IQ actually watches those things? I mean, Vin Diesel, come on, what an actor. Well, did you know that down here in Latin America, they break box office records with the Latin macho boys? However, Latin girls don't go for those kind of movies, but when you have a TV and a Latin guy in the same room, the guy is always in control of the remote. This is Latin America, you know. But where were we? Oh yeah, at the brand new car dealership, negotiating for a gringo whose Spanish sucks. You know why they asked me to go along, right? To hammer the salesman down and slap him around a bit. And, you know, since a car is a big investment, you got to be able to just walk away, even if the guy gets pissed off at you. And they do get pissed off at me sometimes, believe me. Anyway, after we'd been back and forth to three or four car dealerships and hammered on those salespeople mercilessly. Now, normally I'm non-confrontational, kinda. But when it comes to car salesmen, all is fair because, you know, they're just like politicians. They'll lie to you. And in the end, no matter how good a deal you've gotten, you never really get over on them because they know what the car costs the dealership and you don't. By the way, I never knew a car salesman in Latin America that really knew anything about what he was selling, nor do salespeople at electronics or appliance stores. It's always a bit discouraging when you know twice as much about the product than the salesperson. Because, you know, as a gringo, you would have researched it well ahead of time. However, that's not the Latin way of doing things, at least not yet. Anyway, when the deal was finally made and the paperwork was signed, the salesperson pulled out a new form to fill out, something I'd never seen before. Now, if you remember from a past show, I mentioned you can't really walk in and pay strict cash for a car anymore. I mean, green cash. You have to wire the money or write a check because of all the narco stuff and money laundering going on. Those are the international bank regulations for all first and third world countries that use the SWIFT wire transfer services. We're talking about all the countries that signed the FATCA and CATCA agreements. And now, unfortunately, pretty much all bank transactions can be reported back to the U.S. Treasury. Another reason you really have to get that plan B together and vote with your feet. Sooner the better. So anyway, the dealer pulls out a piece of paper. It's in Spanish, of course. And it says, are you affiliated with or are you paid by any political party and or do you work for the government? If so, in what capacity, what department, and who is your immediate supervisor, and how much do you earn a year? Now, when I saw that thing, I said, what? I'd never seen anything like that before. Of course, my gringo friend checked the boxes that said he wasn't affiliated with any of that stuff, being a gringo. Then I asked the salesman, what's that all about? And he said, well, you know, there's so much government corruption, graft thievery, and everything else you can think of, that nearly all Latin governments have new reporting requirements with regards to large purchases by people who work for government. He said the new measures were to flag government employees whose expenses didn't justify their income. Or is it their income doesn't justify their expenses? You get it. Then he winked and said, you know, the first thing these corrupt government guys will do once they've dipped into the till is show up at a new car dealership and buy a couple of high-end cars. Then he smiled and winked again and said, you know, you can't buy a couple of Range Rovers on a salary of $6,000 a year. Then I asked him if this new regulation has cut into their business, and he said, yeah. Then he said, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, when we were formally told not to take any more cash, only checks, wire transfers, and trade-ins, we thought that was going to hurt the business, but it didn't. Because he said, you know, there's a lot of international and offshore banks where checks are drawn and wire transfers come from, and we don't know the origin of that stuff. We always figured if it's coming from a bank from another jurisdiction, it's been vetted. But now, he said, with this new form people have to fill out, it goes directly to the government tax bureau, where they have records of all government employees and their salaries. So the bottom line, you can see the good and the bad in that system. Bad is that there's more government bureaucracy, more fat-ass government slugs and paperwork to clog the system, not to mention another big step in the keeping tabs on everyone Big Brother process. And the good, well, it will put a damper on certain government puss bags who steal with impunity. The evidence being, the salesman said, their sales have been down since the advent of that new paperwork. However, I doubt that those corpulent pustules in government will stop their stealing. They'll just funnel even more of their dough into the real estate boom slash bubble, which is cracking at the seams right now. And by the way, isn't it the fox guarding the hen house when government makes the rules to investigate itself? We've seen how well that's worked out with the Bush and the Clinton crime families, haven't we? Oh well, enough said about that. You know, I still keep getting a trickle of emails from people talking about moving to Belize. Okay, I'm all for voting with your feet and getting that Plan B going, but not to Belize, please. I know the place well, too well. I hear practically nothing but regrets from expats who've moved there. And you know, people do have their reasons for thinking about Belize. One is international living's always talking about it. Number two, they speak English. But you know, that's a rather flimsy hook to hang your whole future on. They speak English, so I'm going to move there. Now, what most expat gonna-bes and wannabes don't realize is that there's always a bit more English spoken anywhere on the east coast of Latin America. Why? Because the Caribbean and Atlantic Ocean coastal regions were settled and plundered various times throughout history by the British and British pirates. So there'll always be more English spoken on the eastern side of Latin America, whereas as you move westward to the Pacific Ocean side, there'll be very little English spoken at all, except where gringos have invaded, like, for example, Costa Rica. Anyway, the subject of Belize comes up all the time in emails and at my Expat Insider seminars. We talk about what Belize is really like and why a Belize trust is very good if you're looking for a very small footprint and really want an ironclad way to protect your assets. However, I also warn people that it's not a good idea to keep any substantial amounts of money in a Belize bank. Even though there's never been a bank failure in Belize, the fact is incompetent government pussbags have racked up a huge debt for a country so small. In the last 10 years, it's been bailed out twice by mother country England because it was insolvent and on the verge of bankruptcy. Now, most everyone in Belize thinks that England will always come to the rescue when Belize screws up. But you see, England's virtually bankrupt and in no position to bail anyone out. Not anymore. So for a long time, I've been giving Belize the thumbs down. In fact, I've had some people come to my Expat Insider seminars who ended up going to Belize anyway, despite the cautions given. So then why is there such a difference between Belize and the rest of Latin America? For one thing, there's a huge divide between the have and the have-nots, much greater than for the rest of Spanish-speaking Latin America. So for the poor in Spanish-speaking Latin America, there actually is some upward mobility, which really doesn't exist in Belize. The poor are really poor and they stay that way. But you need boots on the ground in Belize to see that. Not to mention almost all the gringos I know who've lived in both Spanish-speaking Latin America and Belize say they feel much more comfortable around regular Latins than they do around average people from Belize. They point to the extreme have and have-not thing, and they feel some awkwardness with the locals, which is why petty crime is out of control. Meanwhile, on the subject of Belize, an email from listener Steve. And I'll comment on it as we go along. He says, "Hi, Johnny. I doubt Belize has ever been on your list of Plan B destinations." Boy, he's right about that. It sure isn't on mine. But have you been following the recent slow-moving train wreck that the Belizean economy is turning into? Now, a few years ago, the government of Belize bought BTL, the largest telephone company in the country, from a Brit guy named Michael Ashcroft. They still owe him money on the deal, and since the Belizean economy is in the toilet, the government just doesn't have the money to make good on the debt. You can get a little background on the story here, and then he gives me a link to a recent newspaper article that says the government owes Ashcroft $50 million, and that the Belize Prime Minister says if they paid out that amount, by the way, the amount owed is not in dispute, they just don't want to pay it. It would substantially weaken the country's foreign reserve position, he said. And then the Belizean Prime Minister, Dean Barrow, said, if Ashcroft tries to go to the U.S. to get concessions on assets Belize has in U.S. banks, it would be considered an act of economic warfare. Okay, then, since then, Ashcroft has filed against Belize in U.S. courts for their assets in U.S. banks. Okay, back to Steve's email now. He says, much of Belize's foreign reserves are tied up in U.S. banks, and U.S. courts have ruled they are fair game for judgments against Belize, meaning Mr. Ashcroft can claim them as fulfillment of the debt. Now, the Belizean government appealed the case to the U.S. Supreme Court, who declined to hear it on January 9th of this year. Meanwhile, Mr. Ashcroft has filed a claim against those assets in U.S. court. In a fit of desperation, the government of Belize has passed a law making it illegal for any Belizean to assist in the collection of that debt. And the details are here. Then he gives me a link. Let me read a little bit from this Belize Channel 7 news report. It says, Friday, January 27, 2017, just a few days ago, it says, last night, there was an emergency house meeting at the Barrow administration with less than 24 hours notice. Tonight, we know the purpose of this meeting is to get the House to pass a very unusual piece of legislation. With an odd name, it's called A Bill for an Act to Restate for Greater Certainty the Immunity of the Central Bank of Belize for Legal Proceedings in Other States. So basically, it's designed to protect Belize's reserves from the Ashcroft companies that are trying to recover $50 million in awards already granted by a U.S. court. The article says, today, when Barrow presented the bill, the prime minister said that it had to be done in a hurry and with state secrecy. That's because there were indications that the Ashcroft interests would try to swoop in and freeze Central Bank of Belize reserves in the U.S. before they could be protected or firewalled with this new legislation. The prime minister then said, we're in a race against time. We must know that our country's reserves are a big, fat target for predators who would seek to collapse our economy. Yeah, like predators are collapsing their economy, not those idiots in government. Then he says, basically, I'll paraphrase this a bit. He says, any person or entity that wishes to attach the Belizean government assets in the U.S., the effort will be a criminal offense, and that person or entity will be liable for prosecution in Belize. Then get this, he says, this new law does not stop people from abroad from still attempting to do this. We have no way of getting at them because they are not in this country and perhaps will never come to this country. But in current circumstances, this particular threat is sourced to persons and entities who are within the jurisdiction of Belize now. So we are doing all we can, by the way, of this bill to deter people within our country from making that sort of effort. Because he says if their efforts to attach government assets were to succeed, this would put our country completely on the brink of disaster. Now, this part is funny, even crazy. Talk about a banana republic. In the official record, it says, the leader of the opposition party, Honorable John Bresino, says, quote, I would have hoped, Mr. Prime Minister, you could have given us more time to look at this bill. We are seeing it just right now. We would like to have enough time to study it and to consult with it. Now get this. Then the Prime Minister answers. He says, Madam Speaker, I will apologize and say that on the next occasion, I will consult you. Yeah, next time he feels like shoving a last-minute bill down the Congress's throat. Now, back to Stephen's original email. He says, it's actually quite comical to watch the proceedings on Belizean television. Then he gives me the Vimeo link here. So if you want a good laugh, you can watch it. I'll give you the link. And then Steve says, this whole story spectacle only goes to prove that politicians are thieving pus buckets, no matter where they are. The Prime Minister believes, even admits on camera, that he could be accused of using, quote, banana republic tactics. His whole argument seems to be that Belize doesn't have the money to pay its bills, so it doesn't have to. Then Steve says, if you were a Las Vegas bookie, you would even accept a bet on who's going to win this fight. Well, I sure wouldn't. Belize has substantial assets in the U.S., and the courts there in the U.S. have ruled that Ashcroft has a right to settle that debt out of those assets. This looks like a fight between a hammer and a nail. We know who the nail is and how that story always ends. There are a number of lessons, he says, we can certainly draw from this story. Obviously, anybody who's planning to move to Belize anytime soon might want to reconsider. The infrastructure is pretty spotty already. By the way, it's me, Johnny, again. I can attest to that. In fact, it's well known that Belize, Venezuela, and Cuba have the worst yet most expensive phone systems in all of Latin America. And wouldn't you know it, it's the government that bought the phone service from Ashcroft in Belize. By the way, it's not just with cell phones that you pay a very high price and have poor service. Belize imports 95% or more of all manufactured items, including electronics. So you'll pay more than first world prices for a lot of stuff. So if you do live there and want to live like a first world gringo, you'll be paying first world gringo prices. And you'll, by the way, need a pool. And the maintenance, if you have a pool near the beach, at least $100 a month. How do I know that? Because I've had 3 beachfront pools already. So yes, the infrastructure in Belize is very spotty, except where the gringo subdivisions are. We're talking about those beautiful island cays of Belize. A real white sand beach paradise, however, the houses, apartments, and condos are first world expensive. Anyway, then Steve says, I can't imagine it's going to get any better after the government defaults on its debts. Plus, the Belizean government even admits that losing $50 million in foreign reserves would be a kick in the head for their economy, which they're having a hard time sustaining as it is. You know, Johnny, there also may be a cautionary tale for anyone who still has substantial assets in the U.S. And if you're looking for a sign that the market conditions on the gringo tourist trail are about to break, this certainly qualifies as a bellwether example. I wonder how many gringos are going to lose their shirts because they bought property on one of those Ks that easily could take a big hit in the next few months. Anyway, Johnny, I thought this might be a good point to talk about on your show. All the best from Kentucky. Keep up the great work, Steve. Oh, then he says, I left out the best part, Johnny. If you watch this Channel 7 Belize news story from last Friday, they mention the lawyer who's handling the case for the Belize government just happens to be the Prime Minister's brother. So the Baro family, that's the Prime Minister, makes money off this deal no matter which way it breaks. Hard to find a better example of a banana republic than that. You think? All right, Steve, thanks a lot for that. I guess that really does spell out another great reason why it's not a good idea to move to Belize, nor put money, any substantial amount anyway, in a Belize bank. Now, talking about being a banana republic, I just want to say that it's undisputed that Belize owes that money. They just don't want to pay. Which is, again, why I don't recommend gringos seek out government contracts in Latin America either. Seems every gringo I know who's got some kind of government contract's been ripped off or nickeled and dimed to death along the way, including me. You longtime listeners will remember the story I told about the radio gig I did for a Latin American government tourism agency. Unfortunately, what I didn't know, when you sign a contract like that right before election time and the opposing party wins, the new government will often just void or renege on old contracts. which is exactly what happened to me and a few of my other gringo friends who entered into other types of government contracts. Don't do it. You'll regret it. By the way, in checking this Belize story out, I can't help but notice that when Ashcroft filed his claim in U.S. court, his lawyers said a reasonable amount of time has passed since the claim for judgment was entered. In fact, more than a year ago, Belize was supposed to satisfy the judgment. Then, more than a half a year later, Belize finally replied on June 9, 2016, asking for an appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. Yep, just like a chaotic banana republic, it took him 6 months to file a reply. Then, 6 months later, on January 9, 2017, the U.S. Supreme Court denied Belize's petition. Then, 2 days later, January 11th, Belize issued a press release stating that the government has no intention of ever paying a penny. So again, I'll ask all you gonna-bees and wannabes, do you want to move to Belize, a country whose economy is in the dumpster, who'll renege on its debts and change laws willy-nilly? Why not? International Living says it's a good place to live. Of course, they're still big on Panama and Costa Rica, too. So then, what's Belize good for? Well, it's a very nice vacation. If you like scuba, snorkeling, and water sports, it's great for that. But it won't be cheap. You won't get any deals. And of course, legally, you've got some great instruments there. You've got the Airtight Belize Trust. And the cool thing is you don't have to live there to create and maintain it. And those trusts are truly airtight. A lot of people will buy a Belize Trust and have a corporation or two in another foreign country, which are actually folded in under the Belize Trust, which owns and controls them. Even though the trust is legally drawn up in Belize, it can own assets all over the world. So even if the government and banking system goes down in Belize, it doesn't affect your assets. And the cool thing about a Belize Trust is none of the assets can be attached by a lawsuit or a judgment coming from another country, which is why they say a Belize Trust is bulletproof. And from what I understand, not a single Belize Trust has ever been successfully penetrated or broken up. Yep, it's a special case, and we do talk about that at the Expat Insider Seminars. So, Belize Trusts, very good. Belize Banking, not so good. Unless, of course, you're dealing with small amounts of dough. In fact, some gringos I know use Belize Banks to get Visa, MasterCard, credit, and debit cards, and top the bank account off every month as you use that credit card to pay the charges. And of course, because we're talking about Visa or MasterCard, you can use them all over the world for purchases and cash withdrawals. Two more things about Belize. One, this story shows you don't want to have your money in a U.S. bank where it could easily be attached or frozen by the U.S. government, which is why you need to have an offshore bank account. Now, a country like Belize on the edge of default, what do you think their next step will be? Raising taxes, of course. And like Ecuador, who are they going to hit? Why, the people with money. That would be the gringos. By the way, people have been asking, they've been pestering me, so I've finally come up with some dates for my next Expat Insider Seminar. It'll be held off the tourist trail in Central America again, Saturday, July 8, 2017, through Thursday, July 13, 2017. So providing the world doesn't implode by then, and Uncle Sam doesn't impose new travel restrictions, that's when my next Expat Insider Seminar will take place. Now, with my last Expat Insider Seminar, which ended about a month ago, I was full up well before the start date. I only take around 25 people, so last time I had to turn some people away. That means you have to start thinking about making your plans now. By the way, just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll put you on my early bird list for the seminar, and you'll get the latest updates. So the next seminar is about 5 months from now. In the meantime, you should be actively working on the steps to get your plan B going. And the best way to get organized from where you're sitting up in the first row right now is to go to expatplanb.com and sign up for my Expat Essentials course. I guarantee after you've gone through my 9-hour course, you'll have the necessary information and that all-important confidence to get seriously moving on your own plan B. Now, I'm not exaggerating at all when I say I wish someone had done this a long time ago when I first moved down here some 27 years ago, because you know what? There was no internet, practically no cell phone service down here, no one to blog, no one to ask questions to. I just came down and did it on my own. Even now, people say, that was unusually brave of you to do that, Johnny. Well, looking back, maybe it was unusually stupid because I made every clueless gringo mistake in the book. because I had no one to lean on for advice. First 2 years I came down, I went to Costa Rica. Stupid move, but I did learn a lot. And more than anything, I learned that the average gringo living on the gringo tourist trail doesn't really know much, except that he's always trying to copy what he had up in the first world. But soon enough you learn the best way to live is to have a balance between the two cultures. It's a mistake to be pure first world gringo or to go completely rustic or native. If you have a foot in both worlds, you'll eventually get very comfortable with that. So the first couple of years I was done, I was on the gringo tourist trail, what there was of it in Costa Rica some 27 years ago anyway. And after a few bad experiences there, watching gringos getting ripped off by lawyers, locals, and gringos, I ditched that scene and went completely off the gringo tourist trail. And I can tell you, when your Spanish sucks or is almost zero, that's a very brave thing to do. Some would call it stupid. In fact, there were a few times I remember I was looking out my hotel window, looking down on the streets of a completely different culture with not a gringo in sight, thinking, I don't know if this was the right thing to do. So there I was, no internet, no cell phone, no expat referent books or articles. That little cultural niche hadn't even started yet. All there was in the way of books back then was Latin America on $20 a day and folders. Of course, there were those backpackers and those backpacker hostels, but that never was my style. I'm the kind of person who insists on his own bathroom and a shower at least once a day. And of course, since I was never into heavy partying or the nightlife or getting drunk on the cheapest rat gut beer in the country, I wasn't much good around backpackers who are pretty much into all that. Worse yet, 99% of them were liberal Democrats and I'm a libertarian. So you can imagine how a lot of those conversations went down. Bottom line, way back when I really would have liked some expat to lean on or expat reference points, there were none. Which is why today it's so much easier to get yourself a plan B and vote with your feet. Again, the best way to get rolling if you like my style of living, which is off the gringo tourist trail or not too close to it anyway, is to come down to one of my expat insider seminars and do check out my expat essentials course at expatplanb.com. Then again, if you vote with your feet, but you feel you just must live fairly close to gringos, and you don't mind paying gringo prices, there's always Mexico, Panama, Costa Rica, and Belize. However, someday when you're looking out your hotel window at all those transplanted gringos below, you too might wonder, man, I don't know, was this the right thing to do? Maybe I should have gone to Johnny's Expat Insider Seminar after all, or at least checked out that Expat Essentials course.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my three videos. See ya. Nos vemos.